You're listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay first aired on October 24th, 2003.
A few years ago, when I was serving as temporary director of Sterling Nature Center, our headquarters was in the former residence of Christopher Jensvold. The property, then in a state of disrepair, was once a showplace, architecturally unique and horticulturally resplendent. In researching the history of the man, it became clear that the house and its gardens, if restored, would provide the Nature Center with a unique drawing card that would help to put it on the map. Mr. Jensvold, a graduate of West Point, died in 1959, but his memory was still alive in the Sterling community, nowhere more poignantly than in the remnants of his gardens. One of the great joys of my 3 years as founding director was a spectacular sequence of blooms that greeted my arrival each day during the growing season. 1 year it stretched from late February to November. It started with winter aconite, a golden member of the buttercup family, followed by deep blue squill, a lily, and varicolored crocuses, relatives of the iris. I loved the summer flowers and the flowering shrubs, but my most treasured memory was of one September morning when I arrived to see sprinklings of lavender across the lawn. In the bright sun and the still green ground cover, they shone forth with a ghostly glow. This was my first encounter at 73 years of age with the fall crocus. I was instantly smitten, but it was 6 years before we could add them to our home gardens. I am an inveterate admirer of flowers, but an inattentive gardener. During my career as an environmental educator, I have given more time and thought to developing wildflower gardens at nature centers than I have to the landscaping around the 9 different houses we've owned or rented. At any rate, this phenomenon of crocus blooming, one species in early spring, at the very beginning of the growing season, and another toward the very end, caused me to ponder on the biological mechanism that directs such behavior. It probably relates to photoperiod, day length. Plants are very sensitive to the number of daylight hours available. We've talked before about the response of birds to day length. With them, migration, courtship, mating, and plumage change are all related to or triggered by day length. Experiments with plants in which day length was manipulated using artificial lighting uncovered some interesting things, including the fact that blooming could be initiated at odd times. Some plants related to or adjusted to the length of dark periods when day-night length was extended beyond the normal 24 hours. In the process of the investigation of response to varying periods of light, it was also discovered that alterations in wavelength, the color spectrum of the light, affected plant growth. Some plants would grow prodigiously under a violet or red shift, but would not bloom. Others might produce fruit, but the fruit continued to grow without ripening. Some plants reverse the process. About 35 years ago, when I was considering some time-lapse photography, I did considerable reading about the subject. The details are hazy in my mind now, but I do remember that a researcher named John Ott, doing some time-lapse sequences for Disney Studios, couldn't get fruit to ripen properly. He finally discovered that the fluorescent lights he was using were not full spectrum and did not provide the wavelengths required for an orderly maturing of the fruit. Supplying full-spectrum light corrected that and initiated some interesting research on the effect of light wavelength on plant growth. Biologists divide the year into 4 periods: vernal, spring, estival, summer, autumnal, fall, and hibernal, winter. Each one has its own photoperiod phenomena, which vary as we move away from the equator. These varying conditions are apparently much more important than climate in initiating growth, flowering, fruiting, and periods of rest. Consider, for instance, those plants growing in polar regions, when daylight photoperiods and nighttime are seasonal rather than diurnal. Details of their life cycles exhibit interesting adjustments not found in similar plants growing in our region. Most spring flowers, especially woodland varieties, have high metabolic rates, requiring extended periods of direct sunlight. When the tree leaves erupt, throwing the forest floor into shade, these plants cease blooming. Some of them, after setting fruit, disappear completely, to return again next spring. My 2 species of crocus, spring and fall, are like seasonal bookends, requiring entirely different photoperiod conditions. Well, that's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.